This is State of the Union, the District Council 37 radio show on 91.5 WNYE FM. I'm Chris Policano. DC 37 is New York City's largest public employee union. We're part of the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, also known as AFSCME. We're on the air Sundays at 8 p.m. We rebroadcast on Wednesdays at 1:30 p.m. We're also available as a podcast. You simply go to the podcast app on your smartphone or tablet and search for DC 37 State of the Union. You can stay in touch with us by checking out our website, www.dc37.net. You can follow us on social media on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And if you have any comments about our show or would like us to promote a community event, please just drop us a line at stateoftheunion@dc37.net. We begin tonight's show on a sad note. A city Department of Transportation worker was killed in an accident early Tuesday, that's last week, near Gracie Mansion while on the job on the Upper East Side. The victim is a DC 37 member, a member of Local 983. His name, Eduardo Calle Abril. He was 44 years old. A married Queens dad. Joe Puglio, who was the Local 983 president, and the Local 983 officers and executive board, issued these remarks. "It is in moments like these that we remember how it takes but only an instant to lose those close to us, and we want to express our deepest condolences to the family and to our Local 983 brothers and sisters who are grieving right now. Some of the work that is done in our members' everyday routines is that which can be very dangerous, and we urge all of you to remember to protect yourself and your safety when on the job and otherwise. May our thoughts and prayers be felt during this difficult time and the days ahead, and remember to be kind to those we work with and walk alongside each other each day. We are all family." Statement by Joe Puglio, Local 983 president, on behalf of the Local 983 officers and the Local 983 Executive Board, we at DC 37 send our deepest condolences to the family of Eduardo Calle Abril. Later on the show, we have City Council Speaker Corey Johnson. In our first segment this evening, we're speaking to Dan Janison, Newsday columnist, who's been on this show before. Welcome back, sir.
Thank you.
You write about Washington these days, and right. I am kind of obsessed with the fact that the fellow who is, the guy in charge, Donald Trump, and Rudy Giuliani, his consigliere, is that what you would call Rudy Giuliani? Is that the role he's got? These two New York guys who were kind of sort of shunned by the city of New York, are the center of the storm.
Right. Well, I was noticing a parallel between the way they're running their governments. Giuliani and the city came in and said, "We're going to get rid of all these career professionals, or we're right. at least going to shunt them aside, and they don't know what they're doing, and I'm going to run things with my own political priorities." And in some cases, that meant my own partisan priorities. And Trump, as you see from the impeachment hearings, is kind of doing the same thing. We're going to push aside these experts in diplomacy and Eastern Europe, and we're going to push our own program, this one of partisan interest, upon them and throw them aside. There's always there seems to be between them a great degradation of people who are professionals who work for a living, which may be of concern to folks at District 37,
right.
District Council 37, and the white collar unions.
Well, Giuliani came in with all the bluster. My memory is that Giuliani came in with a lot of bluster about privatization. Remember that? And he was going to privatize everything. And it wasn't even to save money necessarily. It was to make it happen.
It was a mantra.
What was always impressive about what was always interesting about Giuliani was his idea of excellence. We're going to replace these people who've been doing this with Benny Boombatz.
Right. Whose excellence will prevail.
Right. And they were never first-class guys. They were always people who... Where did they come? Where did Giuliani's people come from?
Like with Trump, there was a very limited gene pool because the Republican Party in New York had pretty much wasted away to the point where they just didn't have people. And the people who were, you know, there was a small core of loyal, some of them pretty good.
Right.
Some of them pretty good, right. But there was a very small core of loyal folks. And the when Trump came around into office, one of the problems was getting anybody to work for him, and that was a much more problematic situation.
Well, there has been an illusion, and this illusion always drives me crazy because, again, those of us who have covered these fellows for years mm-hmm. and have known these. You know, the world in which they operate, they have very small circles of trust around them, and they always know best. It's always, you know,
that's right.
they do not defer to, as you just said, they do not defer to expertise on anything.
Right. And, you know, I was also thinking about, you know, W, the former president, went around the intelligence people in the CIA in order to follow a cockamamie theory about uranium to prove that Saddam Hussein had weapons of mass destruction when he actually turned out that he didn't.
Right.
That was a lesson could have been learned in, you know, you may want to listen to the people who do this for a living.
Where are we now? What is going on? This show will air on Sunday the 27th. It's been a kind of crazy week. I woke up this morning and heard somebody named Matt Gaetz trying to get arrested on national television.
Yeah, they were doing a little. This was on Wednesday. They were doing a little Roger Stone style Brooks Brothers riot.
The Republicans wanted to get into the hearing room, and they decided...
They went into the hearing room because it was in the basement, and they decided that it was a secretive a star chamber proceeding against the president. The only problem with that was it was a completely legal and proper hearing that was being held with Republicans in the chamber.
So this
including,
is...
Including, I think... Pence's brother was in there.
Indiana. So this is what's known as a...
It was preposterous.
Stunt, right?
Oh, yeah, completely.
And...
Completely.
And now, do you think... I live in the social media world a lot. I'm on social mm-hmm. media a lot, and it always... It's very upsetting to watch how the left and people on the left... and their friends are talking to each other, and people on the right and their friends are talking to mm-hmm. each other. And what strikes me about this is they keep calling, folks on the left keep calling for the Republicans to act with courage and not realizing or not caring that, in fact, these elected officials are, because of redistricting in 2010 or following the midterms of 2010, these people want to get reelected, and their constituents are still supporting mm-hmm. Donald Trump.
Absolutely. That's a very important thing to remember. And the minute that the polls crash on Trump,
right.
you'll see it turn around. So it's true. Is it wrong to respond to the sentiments of your district? No. Is it, but what if it's all based on fluff? Then you have a very, very bold thing that you might want to do, which is actually dissent, and then you can give way to the next person who has the job.
Do you have any thoughts about whether or not the Republicans in 1972 or whenever it was that they had to deal with Richard Nixon, mm-hmm. were they in the same boat?
Well, you know, it's interesting. Somebody brought this up recently that only a couple of weeks. Before Nixon resigned, who was it? It was his vice president, Gerald Ford, went out and said that the only reason that the Democrats are pursuing this impeachment thing is to nullify the results of the 1972 election.
That sounds what is the past
quite familiar,
prologue?
Right?
Yeah, past is prologue. Is that
yeah. Well, you know, I don't know if we get a resignation.
But you're saying that this was just two weeks before he resigned.
Just a short time. He was keeping up appearances, and you know, and that's you know, and saying that this is something that the Democrats are doing that is contrived.
We're talking with Dan Janison, who is the Newsday columnist, who's been on this show before. We'll be on this show again. I've got about a minute left, literally a minute left. What are your thoughts about where we are now?
The same as they've been for the past 3 years, which is we've never been in this territory before.
Every day is a new unprecedented event. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, it's really quite a show. Stay tuned. We haven't lost the suspense.
Dan Janison, Newsday columnist. Thank you very much, my friend.
Thank you.
All right. Coming up next, City Council Speaker Corey Johnson, and we'll be right back.
Were you a September 11th responder or volunteer? Were you present at the dust cloud on 9/11? Do you live, work, or go to school in the New York City disaster area on 9/11 or in the following months? Do you now suffer from problems such as chronic cough, shortness of breath, anxiety, depression, or have other symptoms? If so, you may be eligible for the World Trade Center Health Program and could receive medical monitoring and treatment at no out-of-pocket cost to you. To learn more about the program and get an application, go to www.cdc.gov/WTC or call 1-888-982-4748. If you were there, you deserve care. Call today. 1-888-982-4748. 1-888-982-4748. If you were there, you deserve care.
We're back. This is State of the Union, the District Council 37 radio show on 91.5 WNYE FM. I'm Chris Policano. Our next guest is City Council Speaker Corey Johnson. Welcome to the show, sir.
Thanks for having me, Chris, and hi to everyone in DC 37.
I just wanted to, well, one thing we wanted to begin with is to, I want to, on behalf of the early childhood educators who work for nonprofit organizations across the city, I wanted to thank you for being a critical part of the agreement that was made to put them on the path to wage parity with their counterparts at New York City Public Schools. And that was something that they've been seeking for a long time, and you are an integral part of making that happen.
Thank you. I mean, I'm really, really proud of it. We, I think, are creating a system that will ensure that the city never again loses sight of what pay parity means. And DC 37 was integral. Henry Garrido was the real champion and leader of getting this done in working with us and with the administration so that the DC 37 contract aligns with the United Federation for Teacher contract deadlines. And just a very, very quick overview for folks that may not remember all the details, we added $29 million to the current fiscal year, and that will grow to $57 million when the parity is fully implemented. And it's going to give pay parity to certified teachers with bachelor and master's degrees over a three-year period. It will give all other staff, including non-certified teachers, an $1,800 bonus immediately and a 2% salary increase starting next year, and it will restructure healthcare costs to lower people's copays. And the reason why this is so important is that you have these teachers that are affecting the minds of children in New York City, the future leaders of New York City, and they were being paid significantly less than their counterparts that were doing the same exact job in the DOE system. And for far too long, people let it stand, but with the leadership of DC 37, your members, Henry Garrido, we finally got this done in June, and saying we were going to make it a real priority in the budget. And then just a few weeks later, in the middle of July, we all stood together and announced it. And so I'm really, really proud. It's us righting a historical wrong. And the partnership we had with DC 37 was integral to actually getting this done and across the finish line. And as you know, Chris, I mean, the predominant majority of these teachers that are affected are women of color.
That's right.
Who were being paid far less. And it was an issue that should have been handled years ago, but finally we did the right thing. And then just a couple of weeks ago, we announced that we're doing it for Head Start teachers as well. We're building on the progress we announced in July. So this is very, very exciting.
How did you come? I ask this of every elected official who comes on this show. How did you come to public service? What was the moment that made you say, this is what I want to do?
Well, I won't tell you my whole long story, but the brief version of it is I grew up in a little tiny town about 30 miles north of Boston. My mom was my lunch lady at school. My dad was a Pepsi truck driver, and there were 12 units of public housing in the town that I grew up in, and we lived in one of those 12 units. And I came out of the closet when I was 16 years old, and I was in high school. I was a junior in high school, and it was about 6 months after Matthew Shepard had been murdered in Wyoming, and I decided that I wanted to live my truth. And so when I came out, I was the only openly gay student, and I had just been elected captain of my high school football team, and that led me into LGBT activism, and I started getting involved politically. I moved to New York when I was 19 years old. I interned on Mark Green's campaign for mayor in 2001. My first job in politics was working on Carl McCall's primary election, running for governor.
How old were you?
I was 20.
Oh, wow.
I was 20 in 2002. And then I got involved locally. I got involved at my local community board for Chelsea and Hell's Kitchen. I was appointed when I was 23 years old. I worked my way up the board. I was secretary and then second vice chair and then first vice chair. And I became chair at 29 years old. I was youngest community board chair in the city at the time. And then I ran for city council in 2013. Somehow I won. And a few years later, I ran for speaker. And now I'm talking to you.
You see the perks of power.
Yes.
But when you came out and you were 16 years old, the reaction to that?
I was really, really fortunate and lucky because my parents were immediately unconditionally loving and affirming, but I didn't know it was going to happen
right
at my school. I mean, football was kind of God in the area that I grew up in. It was like Friday Night Lights.
Right.
And I was a really good football player, which is why I was elected captain of the team. And I was scared about what was going to happen to me at school. But luckily for me, the team accepted me, which set the tone for the rest of the school. And then the Massachusetts Department of Education had a speaking program for LGBT students to speak at other schools about their experience. And that's what got me involved in public speaking. And that's what eventually led me to meeting elected officials and deciding I wanted to get politically active, engaged, and involved. And I've been in New York City since May of 2001, when I was 19 years old.
Do you have any favorite thing about New York?
The thing that I love most about New York, and this is the thing that may actually drive some New Yorkers crazy and definitely people that don't live here crazy, I actually love the frenetic, wild energy of New York City. I like the fact that it's super crowded. I like the fact that sometimes it's loud. I like the fact that we are literally the city that never sleeps. You can walk through any neighborhood in all five boroughs at any time of night and you'll see people out and about. I like that about the greatest city in the world of 8.6 million people. So I mean, I think the food is the best food.
Right.
I think we have Broadway and cultural institutions and some of the greatest sports teams. That is what makes New York City great. It's the people that actually live here. I couldn't imagine living anywhere else, which is why I guess almost half my life now I've been in New York City.
You know, I worked at the city council for Speaker Miller as his communications director. And one of the things that I regret looking back, when he was out and about in the city, it was some other press aide who went with him, and he really got, you really got to see the city. You really got to experience the city by being out and about. And I wonder, as is that a significant part of your day, or is that something that is, are you more City Hall based?
You know, I know it's one of the best parts of the job. When I was running for Speaker in 2017, you know, it's your colleagues in the council who cast that vote. So I had to go to 50 other districts around the city. I was in Eastern Queens. I was on Mid Island and Staten Island and the South Shore. I was in South Brooklyn. I was in the Northern Bronx. I was in these neighborhoods that I wouldn't typically be in. And to see the real diversity of New York City, I mean, just a really fun fact that I love about New York is that outside of the country of Liberia in Africa, mm-hmm. the place in the world that has the highest number of Liberians in the world is
guess
the
what?
North Shore of Staten Island.
Is that that's amazing.
When people run for president of Liberia, they actually come to Staten Island to campaign because they want people to call their relatives back home. That tells you everything you need to know about New York City. There's also a very big Sri Lankan community on the North Shore of Staten Island, so they have some of the best Sri Lankan food. You can name any neighborhood across New York City, from Bay Ridge to Jackson Heights to Flushing to Washington Heights to Brighton Beach. You have these communities that are just sort of these little melting pots of people that came to New York with dreams and aspirations for themselves and their family. And the thing that I love most about that and the neighborhoods and exploring the city is that 36% of New Yorkers, 36% of the 8.6 million people who live here were not born in the United States of America,
right.
but they came here because they wanted to make a better life for themselves. And that's the greatest part of being able to explore New York City. And I try to get out as often as I can around all five boroughs to experience that and to talk and hear from New Yorkers.
We're talking with City Council Speaker Corey Johnson. You know, as a union, unions in 2019 are experiencing a rebirth in popularity, yet there is an assault going on across the country on unions, on public sector unions. And here in New York, you know, we're a very pro-union town, but one of the issues that unions help address is inequality. And I'm wondering if you would talk just a little bit about the scope of the problem of inequality in New York and what we can be doing about it.
Yes. I mean, in the wake of the Janus decision, which DC 37 and AFSCME, the international union, were so key in fighting back on, even though we got a bad decision at the Supreme Court, a wrong decision, in my belief, we've still seen really in New York State, which is one of the most unionized states in the country, we've still seen the strength of unions. And that's important, as you said, Chris, because of how big income inequality has become nationally, but even here in New York City. Now, almost one in five New Yorkers are living below the federal poverty line. And the federal poverty line is about $20,000 for a family of four. That is not much money. But if you are in a union, if you are in DC 37, if you are in the Hotel Trades Council or 1199 or 32BJ or UFT or the building trades, you have a protection for your family. You're able to be in the middle class. You're able to have a pension and health care. And that is why unions are so important. You know, I think income inequality is one of the greatest challenges that we face as a country and as a city, and that's why in all of the work that we do here at City Hall, we're always pushing to make sure, I mean, my sort of mantra is do the most good for the people who need it the most. And that is people that are vulnerable, that are working poor. And you have wealth that is concentrated at the top now amongst a handful of billionaires around the country. But we in New York actually, I think, are doing a lot to put investments into communities, in education, in mental health, in social services, in fighting poverty. And hopefully with some of the things we're doing, we'll be a model for the rest of the country. One of the proudest things that I've been able to be part of in my less than 2 years as speaker is fighting for a program called Fair Fares, which is half-price Metro cards for New Yorkers that are living below the poverty line. Because how many of us have seen a mother standing at the turnstile begging for a swipe
right.
for her and for her child? And so we put this program up with $100 million attached to it to make sure that New Yorkers that are living in poverty actually are able to access one of the most New York things about New York, which is the subway. So we have to keep fighting income inequality, and one of the biggest ways to do that is to strengthen unions. That's what we need to do.
And we've got about 2 minutes left. What has been the biggest surprise of being city council speaker to you?
Oh, my God. I mean, you know, to be honest, I was saying a couple of nights ago to my boyfriend when we were sitting in his apartment, I was saying, I still can't believe some days that I'm actually Speaker of the Council. Because, I don't know, I moved here with two bags. I knew one person at 19. I never worked in government before. I wasn't sort of picked out of a line to run for public office. I don't come from a dynastic political family. And so every day for me is just amazing, and I have so much gratitude for it. I think the most surprising thing and the best thing at the same time is, and you worked at the city council, so you know this, Chris, I mean, there is such a dedicated, talented, smart, strategic group of people who work at the city council
right.
where you could name a single issue, whether it's early childhood education or sanitation pickups or how to do school sightings or how to plant a tree in an empty tree pit in New York City. You can literally call any handful of staff members over to City Hall from across the street at 250 Broadway, and they'll come here and they'll know exactly what the issue is, exactly what the touch points are, exactly what the challenges are. So I feel like a sponge. I feel like every day I am getting like a first-class education on areas that I wouldn't typically understand or know because of the amazing people who work at the City Council. Every day I feel challenged. Every day I feel like I'm learning. Every day I feel like I'm able to hopefully move the ball a little bit forward to make a difference on the issues that matter to New Yorkers in their neighborhoods. And that's what I'm most grateful for. And that's what I'm sort of most surprised about, that I have the ability to do that every day because of the amazing team that I have around me.
I knew this conversation was going to fly by, and it did. I hope that we are going to talk to you again
Definitely.
Soon in the near future. City Council Speaker Corey Johnson, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you, Chris, and thanks to the greatest women and men in New York City, the women and men of labor, and especially of DC 37.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Before we go, a couple of announcements. The Ed Fund continues to hold workshops on resume writing, interview techniques, and test-taking strategies, and will do so into November. For details on registration, location, and time, visit www.dc37.net or call 212-815-1700. Remember, if you have any comments about today's show, or any of our shows, please drop us a line at stateoftheunion@dc37.net. The producer is Rudy Orozco. The sound engineer is Andrea Monocchio. I am Chris Policano. Until next time, ciao.